Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shaney, and this is the Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this.
Hello, Leadershifters, and as always, welcome to another episode of the Leadershifter Show with Shaney. My guest today is super interesting and has shifted in his life in the most untraditional path of anyone I've hosted on the podcast before. So I'm really excited for him to share his journey with you, and I'm going to keep that a secret for just a minute. He joins us from Nebraska, which is another first for the Leadershifter Show. I've hosted people from all over the country and many countries around the world, but Michael is joining us from Nebraska. We're going to talk today. Michael is an executive coach, as I am, and he's got a couple of really cool methodologies that we're going to talk about. He's a fellow user of acronyms, so of course, I can't wait for him to articulate those to you. And lastly, we're going to talk about the outdated 360 review. It's a relic of the past that I am equally as passionate about getting rid of in the corporate sphere. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be with you today. So enjoyed getting caught up and listening to your podcast. And so, and I love your angles and just your, irreverent approach to shifting. So I think it's brilliant.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that. Well, why don't we start off by having you just take a walk back in time and share your very unusual origin story and how you shifted from that into coaching.
Yeah. I feel like one of those, even growing up, I will say this, is that I grew up in a musician's home. Okay. So my dad was a pseudo professional musician growing up. And so I grew up being a musician, but there's always that moment to where, like, when I walked in the rooms, I felt like my left brain and my right brain were always kind of competing with each other. So I was artistic, but I was always strong with systems and strategies. And so in the artist seat, I always somehow figured out, like, that I was going to be a number two or helping somebody win with building it out. Found my path into being a music pastor within the church and eventually becoming an executive pastor. So I was spending close to the last two decades of my life being an executive pastor in a large church. And then in 2017, just through some self-realization and I think some divine intervention, I took a bold step and launched down into this wonderful career that I have now and working with some amazing people. And so all the way from executive pastor to, believe it or not, selling cars while I was finishing out my master's degree in executive coaching and leadership, and then launching a brand new company in 2017.
Fantastic. So Leadershifters, I hope you picked up on this. Michael is a former pastor turned coach, which, as I said in the intro, is certainly one of the more unusual shifts of anyone I've had on the show. So how was that shift for you?
I had been, so within the space of church leadership, the church that I was a part of, when I moved here, the church was probably sitting between 500 and 700 people, with pretty limited infrastructure built for leadership development. And then, so by the time, so just to kind of give you context from 2009 to 2017, the church literally went from 500 to close to 3,000, and with about 1,000 people in the leadership pipeline. And so I had become into this space of being somewhat familiar with developing resources and also being a voice of influence and a leadership coach within that space. And so it was a little bit more of like just me continuing on with the thing that had already been developed. But because I had some outside voices and some influences in my life, I wanted to, and I was experiencing some internal pain points within the organization that I was a part of that were absolutely embarrassing and humiliating and just frustrating. And I kind of needed the pain to stop for a moment so I could do some self-reflection to find out, okay, is this whole thing that I'm a part of, is that really the problem? And am I contributing to it, or am I the problem? And I just simply need to try to figure out how to fix me first. Like all these things were going on in my mind. And so it was one of the hardest transitions I've ever made in my life. I regretted it for a little bit. And then all of a sudden everything just kind of started to come into place and I knew I made the right call.
Oh, that's great. And something you said, it aligns so well with my approach, is you got to fix yourself first before you can really help others step into their leadership greatness. And it's not that as coaches we're perfect. Of course, no, we're not. We're human. And almost every coach I know has their own coach, because while it's so easy to coach others and recognize blind spots, it's really hard to do it for ourselves.
100%. And that was part of my journey, is that I remember where I was at. It was in 2017, and that I found myself sitting at a Starbucks in downtown Omaha and scrolling through Facebook and looking at everybody's highlight reels. And then I noticed that one of my acquaintances from literally almost a decade and a half ago was an executive coach, and he was like speaking at some sort of Disney event. And I looked at his feed and I was going, I'm supposed to be doing that. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. And do you ever have those moments where it's like, you recognize like something just within you is like, okay, I need to be there. But it wasn't the stage. It was the influence. I wanted my life to have a bigger splash than what it was having. And I just took like kind of a bold move and sent him over a direct message. And then sure enough, he messaged me back, and he's been my executive coach now for, you know, I don't know, 4 years and nice. Almost five. And great leaders have great coaches. They just do. And I couldn't do it without him.
Absolutely. Mark Benioff, the CEO of Salesforce, pays $1 million a year for access to his coach, which blows my mind. And I'm sure we'd both love to get to that point. But I guess we don't all have access to billionaire SaaS software founders but anyway, you know, got to aspire to these things.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Pre-show, you were telling me that you are still involved in working with religious organizations, and you split your time roughly 30% with other pastors and church leaders and nonprofits, and 70% with enterprises, entrepreneurs, etc. Is there a difference between working with them? And if so, how would you describe it?
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest differences in I'll probably always have a good segment of my company and my time designated towards working with churches and nonprofits, just because I love the missional side of it. And I do believe that everybody deserves the opportunity to experience hope. And that's on both sides of the fence. Like if you're an entrepreneur, sure, enterprise, or in church work, there is a segment of emotional, psychological, and spiritual health that, you know, that everybody, whether you like it or not, you need to face that and kind of and lead through that. On the church side of it, there are some incredibly interesting dynamics between the personalities of the people that are leading the organization, whether they're healthy or unhealthy. You know, because I will say that narcissism exists on both sides of that fence, you know, so there's the big, you know what I'm saying? Like the big personalities, right, that have the big splash, they walk into the room and everybody knows that they're there because they're the charismatic personalities.
Right. No pun intended, but the God complex.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But there are some incredibly humble, really good people like within the church space that are desperately, and I wouldn't say desperately, I'd say they're just simply under-equipped to where they went to seminary or whatnot, to where they learned how to basically communicate and love people. But they, when it comes to running an organization, they're just flying blind. And, and then when, and here's the other paradigm too, the thing that's different between enterprise and church is that an enterprise, anytime that there's dollars attached to it, it's easy to measure it. And it's easier to make decisions as far as who's on the bus and who's not on the bus.
Okay.
Right. In the church world, it's more subjective. And so a leader could technically have some incredibly toxic people on their team or even in their circle of influence, but they get stuck because they don't necessarily know how to make the changes necessary in order to get them into a healthy space, because mm-hmm. it is so complicated to navigate through the political and through the influential and through the familial environments that exist within that church space. And so that was probably one of the biggest differences that I learned really quick, was that the enterprise, they can and probably should at times, they make decisions incredibly fast based on finances. Church world, they probably need to make some decisions a lot faster, but sometimes they feel handicapped in doing that.
Got it. Well, I'm glad to hear, but it's interesting to hear the differences between the two worlds. Besides, you probably can't curse with your church clients. I mean, not that you do, but I'm just thinking more about myself if I were to work with those folks as part of my irreverence. And the fact that I have worked in so many male-dominated industries brings some four-letter words out of my mouth occasionally, and I'd have to filter myself.
Right. Well, I mean, so you can imagine this paradigm. So where in one of my segments, I'll be coaching, you know, one of the largest auto industry influencers within the area, and the mentality of the car industry versus a pastoral world. It's, you know, I joke around sometimes where I go from one environment where I'm hearing the F word dropped 300 times a minute to going to an environment where I want to be the one dropping the F word 300 times per minute. So that's the very real paradigm that I live in sometimes.
Well, let's move on to some of the creative tools that you use with your clients. The first one I want to ask you about is the TEAMS methodology, which I love because it is an acronym and it enumerates some effective ways for leaders to work with their teams. So let's have it.
Awesome. Well, you know, the TEAMS methodology really, and everything that I do is wrapped up around this methodology. So the name of my website is teams.coach. But this TEAMS methodology really outlines these five key principles that really outline almost every single coaching call that I'm on, every single conference that I speak at, every webinar that I do or whatnot. But it really breaks down like this, to where the first one is just identifying targets. Mm-hmm. You know, have we been able to clearly identify what we're trying to accomplish, and do we understand what we're trying to, how do we win? What does the target look mm-hmm. like? The second one, the E, stands for engagement. Now, there are three different levels of engagement that when we start talking about the 360 review here in a little bit, I think that you'll get a kick out of this a little bit, just because with engagement, emotional intelligence, it needs to take a higher level of priority within the workspace now. And so I think it's probably going to be one of the most relevant things we talk about for the next decade, at least. But the three levels of engagement. So how am I engaging with myself? How am I engaging with my team? And how am I engaging with my direct report? So, mm-hmm. So those are the three key elements of engagement. And then action. What's the one thing that I'm doing this week to move towards my target? Taking into consideration the engagement. And then momentum. Momentum is the M, but it looks a little bit differently. So think about it like this: rather than adding things to your plate to move you faster, what are the things that I need to remove? And do I have the authority to remove the things that are slowing me down? Mm-hmm. And then S, synergy. This is where everything is working well. And have I actually created a value paradigm in my organization and even in my personal life to where I can stop, smell the roses, and celebrate the wins, whether they're micro or macro, with my team and with those around me. And so building those, that rhythm and that cadence into my coaching program, it's helped move things along. And so it's been enjoyable for me and also the people I get to serve. So.
Absolutely. Gosh, that's one of the best coaching acronyms I've heard over the years, because there's tons of them. Everybody likes to name their coaching methodology something different. And I really like that. It's very straightforward and aligned with many of the coaching tools that, that I use with clients too. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's go into 360 reviews, since we've alluded to it a few times. Let's stop alluding and start talking.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is your perspective on 360 reviews?
You know, I think that, well, let me tell you a real story that happened to me in a real life context. And I would love to be able to hear you, like, your raw response to this. So I, serving on an executive team, the organization has these clear, values outlined, right? So we have your vision, we have our values, and then we have our behaviors and our attributes. They're like, everything's been documented. It's all great. It's incredibly clear. And so we get around to this time of the year where, of the three executive team members, the main primary leader of the organization decides, hey, we're going to go ahead and kind of do a 360 review here just to find out how well our executive team aligns with the values of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of makes sense, right? You know, sure. feels pretty safe. The questions that went out were basically along the was a comparative analysis opposed to any type of measurable metric type of thing. And how the questions were phrased were this: on a scale of 1 to 10, which one of our team members displays this value better?
What?
Right. And I had no idea that this was happening, like, at the same time. So the senior leader sent this out to the staff, that I'm the one that's actually responsible for this staff. There's a staff of about probably 40 people. And the next thing that I know, I'm sitting in this room looking at this PowerPoint presentation, showing me how the other two leaders, who are very, very, very big charismatic leaders, on this rating scale, to where it's like, when it came to these five key values of the organization, to where it's like, basically, okay, I'm the unpopular kid in the room because I'm the one that's actually building the systems and structures to keep this thing growing and to keep it moving forward. So it became this popularity contest in which, you know, led to some absolute humiliation and frustration, like, at the end of the day. And so let's start there. how do you like that?
And which value of that organization did that approach align to? Dun, dun, dun. Sarcasm.
Yeah, absolutely. It didn't align to a value, but it did did align to the what I call passive toxic culture that exists sometimes in organizations. And, you know, some people actually might think that they're intending well, but sometimes even our best intentions can be disastrous and cause people harm. And in that situation, I can actually pinpoint back to that date when that happened, to where I started a downward spiral, emotionally and psychologically within that team. And, man, I just, you know, that was kind of like where I went on a mission, going, you know what, if there's one thing that I, you know, if I can contribute to organizations that I serve outside of this type of thing, if I can figure out some quality feedback mechanisms that actually elevate personal relationship, critical feedback and critical thinking, and then changing mindsets and, well, what you'd say, shifting mindsets internally, to help people raise their leadership lid, I'm all about it. Right. But do you know the origin of the 360 review?
I'm not sure I do.
This thing goes all the way back to World War II. So the very, very first documented case of the 360 degree review comes from the German army. And they would use this during World War II to evaluate the performance of their senior officers.
And well, let me just interrupt for 1 second and say, when you tell me that 360 reviews originated with Nazi Germany during World War II, I talk about a raw reaction. I'm Jewish and I lost relatives in the Holocaust. So that is beyond anathema for me to hear, and is yet another reason to test 360 reviews.
Well, thank you for sharing that too, by the way. So I'm really thankful that, like, from this point on, I am going to be a part of your story forever, because you're going to think back to this moment when you found out that such a huge violation happened.
Oh.
And so that's massive, right?
Wow. So, and that's been Snopes, right?
Yeah, that's been Snopes. And I think and then there's a couple like organizations that, I think the first documented case of it being used within the context of a business was either like an engineering firm by the name of, I think it was Aesop or something like that, but in the 1950s. But yeah, so going all the way back then to like the 1950s, World War II, et cetera, you know, this thing came into place because the fundamental idea still is incredibly strong and relevant. What do our team members think of our senior leaders? Mm-hmm. That's an incredible, or what do our peers think of me? How am I performing in my space? Does my influence actually impact those around me in a place that moving our organization forward? Sure. I think all of those things are very relevant conversation pieces. Okay. Fast forward to 2021, 2022. We've heard about terms about woke. We've heard terms about cancel culture. We've heard all these different things that have gone on. So now I'm in a space to where I'm coaching leaders that have thousands of people within their organizations, or I'm helping an entrepreneur get off the ground, or I'm working with a pastor who literally is living life by a popularity contest. Every single week he gets up on the platform and he's going to talk about something, and somebody's going to leave a note in the offering basket, letting them know how amazing he is or how much they hate him. And, right. Or the senior leader that's trying to roll things out and understanding that now they have all these different HR processes in which their only measure of effectiveness is going to be subjective at best.
Mm-hmm.
And this is absolutely now in 2021, this, I mean, 22. I would say 2022, right?
We're into February now. I know it's hard to.
Yeah, exactly. It is. But no, I think just because it's not just a think thing, I want to make sure that that when you hear me say the word think, there are so many documented cases in which this 360 review, it's not just ineffective, it is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we've actually allowed this this development utility to continue on. Now, there's other options out there. But what's your lens that you're looking through? What is your perspective and what is your motivation behind it? And I think that's the key. I started with that painful story about what I experienced being on that team when that senior leader sent out that survey in a 360 degree review package, right?
Mm-hmm.
The motivation behind that wasn't for us to get better. The motivation behind that was for the senior leader to look amazing. Mm-hmm. And that is what happens a lot. And that's why it's dangerous.
Right. Well, absolutely bias going into those questions. That's just unacceptable. And that's part of what makes it dangerous. I know when I think about 360s, one of the things that I, for organizations that still do use it, and I'm unable at least now to convince them otherwise, we'll at least talk about how to avoid some of the dangers, which one of the highest ones to me is speaking about culture, it's the what have you done for me lately culture. And so the 360, while it's supposed to encompass half a year or a full year in many organizations, people don't remember the peaks and valleys of the year that's passed, and most of them are just thinking about recent, but there's recency bias. And that's just unfair to the performer, and certainly not a way to help them grow as an individual or to help move the team and the organization forward. I'm curious what other warning Will Rogers signs you see with the 360 besides the ones we've just named.
Yeah, well, you mentioned one that leads into another one, is that we, it's not just recognizing just the peaks and the valleys. It's the idea that on an annual basis, or even a semi-annual basis, excuse me, is that we come back to the idea that we have to evaluate our team members and that we're going to get accurate data 2 times a year that tells us how our team members are performing. And a lot of times, number one is the lack of familiarity with what the job expectations are in the first place.
Yeah.
So you don't know what my job is. So why are you evaluating me on my effectiveness? And if you're only interested in giving me feedback 2 times a year, or if me giving you as my senior leader 2 times a year, you're really not interested in a relationship. And and that's the biggest thing right now. And that's why we built this into my team's methodology. I think I told you on our pre-call, is that there's a part of me that almost exists as saying, hey, if I can figure out ways to make sure that people never use this tool ever again, it's almost like even though we have to use social media in order for us to be able to communicate and for us to be able to create a presence in what we do. But the part that I don't like about social media is that people will actually supplement social media for a real relationship. That's it affects everything, right? It's the same thing with the 360 degree review. It's the idea of like, oh, I'm going to give feedback and people are giving me feedback, you know, once or twice a year. And everything as far as my career, everything as far as my influence is going to be based off of this. But it doesn't take away the implications or the responsibilities that we have as leaders to actually be emotionally, psychologically connected to the people that we serve. And that's the bigger issue, is that what is the emotional cadence here? What is the relational cadence that's happening within our teams? Because without those things, you actually can't have a healthy team. And there's no other way around that.
Right. So what do you recommend as the alternative or alternatives to the 360?
You know, one of the tools that I was just talking with one of my clients about earlier today was this, there's another approach called the 515. And Are you familiar with that?
I am.
So the thing that I love is, and I'd love to be able to talk to you a little bit about this growth formula as well, because I think people really want to they need to understand this. But when it comes down to the cadence, what we found was that a senior leader, it's actually more important for a senior leader to get valuable relational feedback from their team member on a consistent basis versus just the senior leader telling everybody else on the team how he feels like they are actually doing.
100%. Couldn't agree more.
And that's out of hundreds of, maybe even a couple thousand leaders that we've surveyed over the last few years, is that information is actually a lot more valuable. And so even just, so in our team's methodology, we take some of those 515 type approaches, but in that engagement piece, you heard me talk about this a little bit, but it's just the idea that in the team's methodology, when you're putting this into play every single week for your team, you're actually getting back valuable information every single week, kind of turning on some of those blinkers a little bit to let people know, hey, here's how I'm doing. Here's where I'm struggling. Here's some of the, maybe some of the psychological or even some of the mental breakdowns that are happening on my team or that I'm struggling with myself, but keeping that information on a short leash so you can actually address it in real time. So you don't have those big, huge mountain blowups at a year later that really affect people's lives, right?
Yep, absolutely. So the 515 real-time feedback, which I love, it's the TSA mantra, but used in a different context. If you see something, say something.
Yes, absolutely.
Otherwise, we don't learn. And giving feedback months or a year later it's too little too late and doesn't help us pivot or shift soon enough.
Well, and that's the thing, is that the organizations that I see using the 360 review, even after, you know, we have a lot of very, you know, humorous conversations about it. You know, I crack jokes about it at times because there are some pain points that everybody kind of comes back to certain evaluative tools. But what I find is this, and here's what's probably even more troubling than anything, is that the people that are connected to only evaluating their team, whether it's 360 or 180, it doesn't really matter. But if you're only connected to evaluation practices once or twice a year, you're really only checking a box. You're not really wanting progress. You're not wanting to find solutions, because it's just too, it's one of those things to where it's, you're not engaging. All you're doing is evaluating, and there's a big difference.
Absolutely. So I'm going to pause for a second and address the audience. Leadershifters, if you and or your organization is still using the 360, I hope this conversation over the last 6, 7, 8 minutes will shift your perspective on that and make you realize really how ineffective, and to use Michael's term, dangerous they can be, and shift your approach to something much more consistent and regular and in smaller doses. And if you have influence over that, do it tomorrow. Stop using the 360 and take a look at the 515 methodology or some other way to give feedback in a much more regular and timely cadence. And if you think it's not something you can directly influence, go to your HR team and start to socialize the idea with them of shifting from a 360 to another methodology. Okay, so that'll be my challenge for the podcast, is do what you can to influence and shift away from 360s to a better method.
Yeah, see, that's, and thanks for using your influence that way. Yeah. One of the first things that we did when we launched our company is that we built our app. So we have a Teams.coach app that we use at the three different levels of coaching. So we have our executive coaching, and then we have our team coaching, and then we have our leadership pipeline coaching. So somewhere in the middle of the cadence of us working with a team, we try to hit like kind of all three levels within that. But within the team app, a Teams.coach app, this nudge and this algorithm is actually set up to where they get reminded to submit their feedback and to submit their data, to where I actually, as a coach, I actually get out a feedback report every single month. So when I sit down with an executive team, I'm able to say, hey, by the way, your first person, second person, or third person relationships, here's how you're scoring right now this month. And so depending on the type of, if they want to get super interested, you know, like detailed feedback, I'm able to give that to them if they want specifics. Or if they just want to know, on a scale of 1 to 10, here's how you're trending for the month, you're averaging a 7.8 when it comes to personal connectivity on your team. I'm able to do that.
So good. So powerful. I love that. I want to talk to you about that at another time.
Yeah, I would love to.
So the last thing I wanted to ask you about was just an article that you contributed to LinkedIn called The 4 B's of Performance. If you could just quickly walk us through what those are and why they're important.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to give you the 4 B's just right from the top. So the first one we talk about is bullseyes. The second one we talk about is barriers. The third one that we talk about is boundaries. And the fourth one that we talk about is blind spots. So let me talk to you about this, because I think that, and I know without a doubt, that when you are addressing these 4 B's specifically on your team, you're able to unleash things differently because you bring clarity to the, and I would tell people all this, to be clear is to be kind. And we live in a world to where, we live in a world that sounds like some movie trailer or something like that, but we no longer have excuses to be nebulous. Right.
Yep.
And
big
so,
data.
Absolutely. It exists. Like, we can measure it. And, you know, even some CEOs that I work with, they have a rough time putting a KPI on it because they're experiencing organic success, which is great. But when it comes to your vision, you do have to reverse engineer it and be able to build it. But that first part about that with the bullseye is, does your team member actually clearly know how to identify the win? So if you're having that conversation with them, have them identify the bullseye. Say, okay, according to your understanding, what does a win look like to you and what is clearly expected? You'll actually be incredibly surprised at how few people on your team actually clearly know what the bullseye truly is for their job.
So it's like the T in teams in some ways.
Yeah, it very much is. It very much is. But for the sake of us being trendy and marketable and all those things, I shifted the B's because I'm cool like that.
I love that too. Like I said early on, I love acronyms and I love alliteration. So works for me. I mean, honestly, it just makes it easier to remember and thus utilize in real time, because otherwise it's just nice theory or a nice poster.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the second B comes into place when it comes to our barriers. Empowerment is kind of it's a trendy word right now, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think it should be a trendy word. I just think it needs to be a now word. But we do need to bring definition to that a little bit. And so when we talk about boundaries or barriers, really talking about the things that am I able to recognize the things that are slowing me down? And do I actually have permission to be able to remove them or change them if necessary?
Right.
That's a pretty big one, right?
Absolutely. One of the roles of a leader is to help people remove barriers, and whether they're external boundaries that have been inadvertently or intentionally placed within the organization, or the internal barriers to success, that negative self-talk and old beliefs and stuff like that.
It's huge. It's huge. Are you an Enneagram person, by the way?
Yes.
Oh, awesome. So, so, you know, one of the things we talk about quite a bit is just identifying, are you a framework leader or are you a blueprint leader? Cause if you're an 8, 9 or a 1, then you lead with your gut. If you're 2, 3 or 4, you lead with your heart. If you're 5, 6 or 7, you lead with your mind, with your thoughts. Right. But what we found out was just along the way when we talk about specifically about those barriers, is that there are specific Enneagram types that literally they just organically feel empowered to remove those barriers. Right. It's almost like I will ask for forgiveness versus permission. Knowing where those people sit on your team is incredibly important, because that will literally change the whole pace of the organization. And then that third one leads to boundaries. So we talk about blind spots, barriers, and then boundaries. Do I know where my authority begins and do I know where it ends? Think about that. Do I know where my authority begins and do I know where it ends? So what do I need to ask for permission for? What do I have the authority to say yes to? So when it comes to our systems, our strategies, our structures, and our personnel, what do I have the authority to say yes? What do I have the authority to say no to? And what do I have the authority to change?
Right. I love that. And I built that into, I have a delegation model that's called Peach. And one of the steps of that is making sure that people have, that it's very clear what level of authority they have in terms of decision-making, budget, etc. It's so important, and there's not nearly enough clarity on that on team. So I love that it's in your 4Bs. And then the fourth one, blind spots.
This one is, I wish this was a little bit more catchy, but this one is a little bit more personal on it. But have you ever been blindsided by your organization? Has something?
Oh, yes.
Right. And so this is where blind spots really has three different type of lenses to it, two or three. But that first lens of blind spots is, you know, what are the things that consistently blindside you in your organization? And are you able to clearly identify them? I think that, I know without a shadow.
That's the sucker punch aspect of blind spot, right?
It is. It really is. But there's also the collaboration side of blind spot. When it comes to my team, do I know that my team is going to let me know when something is outside of my vision? It's, you know, are they going to have my back? And then personally, am I able to recognize blind spots within our organization, and am I being heard? So if you raise the yellow flag, and as a leader, you have to get to a place to where trust is, it's like Lencioni's, you know, five dysfunctions of the team, right? So trust is this big foundation, but when it comes to trust, there are so many different things that come into the play of that one singular word. And when you have leaders that are sitting in the right seat and you've been clear with them, if they raise a yellow flag that something could be dangerous for the organization and you're not listening to them, or at least considering it, you're taking credibility out of your culture.
Right.
And so those three breakdowns under blind spots, like, man, eliminating blindsided opportunities, you know, like just get rid of that. Make a commitment today to never blindside anybody on your team. Do whatever you can to turn on the blinkers on that. The second one is really champion collaboration and building in a commitment for everybody to be watching out for everybody else's blind spots. You know, so I'm committed to you of saying, hey, if I see something coming your way, I'm going to let you know. And then organizationally, have you empowered and do you value the voice of your team player that when they raise a yellow flag or a red flag, like that we can pause and we can evaluate that?
Great. Thank you for sharing. It's pun intended, divinely inspired in some ways. I love the concepts in that. So last question, Michael, if people want to reach you or get on the app, what's the best way?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a personal relationships guy. And so I'm not, if you want to check out, my website, you know, greenlights.teams.coach or just teams.coach, hop on a free strategy call with me or whatever that is. But I don't want anybody to feel like they're getting sucked into another click funnel that nobody wants to be a part of. Right. So I'm going to actually just give you my cell phone number. This is my personal cell phone number. And I just make this available saying, hey, send me a question. I will answer you. And if you happen to be in the region or if I'm traveling and you want to grab a cup of coffee, let me take you out for coffee. I just love getting to know people and invest. It's like I was reading one of the authors that I love to read is Bob Goff. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No, I haven't.
you know, it's a little bit more of just, you know, just self-leadership type of things. And I remember reading one of his books. I think it was called Love Does. And he put in the back of his book his personal cell phone number. And I thought, you know, I want to be that type of leader. I want to be that type of person that just, you know, is here to serve our world and to be able to make the world just a little bit more of a approachable space. So anyway, but here's my cell phone number. It's area code 763-245-4984. So again, that's 763-245-4984.
All right. I will put that in the show notes. Absolutely.
Yeah. So send me a text message, any leadership question. If you want some free resources on the team methodology or the app, I'll get those to you. And if you're in the area, we get to go have some coffee and that'll be great.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today. I'm just going to do my hallmark wrap up at the end where I summarize what we talked about and what some of the highlights were for me. So first of all, I love how you pointed out your left and right brain. You had the musical side and you had the strategy and tactical side. I think a lot of people share that trait and don't fully utilize one or the other. And I mean, just as a personal example, I started off in life thinking I was a very right brain person. I was great at English and creativity and speaking and, you know, some more of, you know, the broader things in life. And then I ended up working at Wall Street. Who would have guessed? I majored in communication, marketing, and sociology, all pretty right brain things. And then I ended up working on Wall Street for a good portion of my career. So I really got to lean in to the left brain side of me, which was a very pleasant surprise. So leadershifters, we can develop both halves of our brain, if you will. And then of course the Teams methodology, I really love, just to quickly review, targets, engagement, action, momentum, and synergy. The four B's for effective teams: bullseye, barriers, boundaries, and blind spots. And then, of course, we had a huge focus on why to get rid of those damn 360s and replace it with more real-time feedback. So thank you again for joining us today. And leadershifters, until next time.